Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Mutine, adjective, used to describe an individual whose spirit is unyielding, unconstrained, one who navigates life on their own terms, effortlessly. They do not always show up on time, but when they arrive, you notice an individual confident in their contradictions. They know the rules, but behave as if they do not exist. Mutine, the new fragrance by Miu Miu, defined by you.
Upgrade your laundry routine with a durable and reliable Maytag laundry pair at Lowe's. Like the new Maytag washer and dryer with performance-enhanced stain-fighting power designed to cut through serious dirt and grime. And what's great is this laundry pair is in stock and ready for delivery when you need it the most. Don't miss out. Shop Maytag in-store or online today at Lowe's.
Experience a membership that backs your business journey with American Express Business Platinum. When you pay with membership rewards points for all or part of an eligible flight booked with a qualifying airline through Amex Travel, you can get 35% of those points back, up to 1 million points back per calendar year. American Express Business Platinum. There's nothing like it. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/business-platinum.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome to a festive evening, a festive event. It's the annual Rico Bronya Mets Award Show. We did it for the very first time last year after the 2024 season. And I must admit, when we did our award show after that season, it was very happy. There were a lot of smiles. There was a lot of great memories. It was a very happy edition of the Rico Bronya, but we come today with the Mets Award Show from 2025, and I admit there is going to be a lot of anger. There's going to be a lot of sadness. There's going to be a lot of tears because the 2025 season, as we all now know, was an unmitigated disaster. It started off great. It ended horribly. The New York Mets missed the playoffs in an unprecedented way as they spent 3 months playing garbage baseball. So it's very different than 2024, but I do believe in consistency. I do believe in handing out these awards in good times and in bad times, and so we will do so. And before we get started, a quick walk down memory lane. A year ago, when we announced all the awards, Hoff and I would each pick who we thought was the winner of each. I'll let you know how last year went, just as a reminder. Both Hoff and I were unanimous that Francisco Lindor was the MVP of the 2024 season. We were both unanimous that Sean Manaea was the Mets Cy Young Award winner. We were both unanimous that Jose Buteau won the Mets Rookie of the Year Award. We hardly knew ye, as of course he was traded this year to the San Francisco Giants. We were mixed on the reliever of the year. I believed it was Edwin Diaz. Hoff believed it was Phil Maton. The surprise of the year, we both agreed, was Jose Iglesias. The disappointment of the year. Last year, to me, it was Kodai Senga, and to Hoff, it was Brett Beatty. The playoff performer of the year, it's a shame we don't have that again, we both agreed was Mark Vientos. And the moment of the year, which I thought was so many great options, obviously, from 2024, but we both eventually agreed that the spine-tingling Pete Alonso home run against Devin Williams was the moment of the year. So we're going to whip out the exact same awards, but to replace the playoff performer of the year, since obviously there is no playoffs, we just have our negative moment of the year. So that's how we're going to replace the playoff performer of the year, since we don't have one, the negative moment of the year. So let's start off right at the top. And I think this is a challenging one. And that's the Mets MVP award winner. I was racking my brain thinking, because I went through two steps in doing this. The first step was, and I think sometimes this is always the best way to do it, I said, all right, Evan, close your eyes. Think of this past season. Think of the 83 wins, disgusting to even say, and answer the question, who is the most valuable player for the New York Mets in 2025? And when I closed my eyes and I thought about it, my answer was Pete Alonso. But then the next step is, well, look at the numbers. You know, numbers matter. It's not the end all be all, but I like to say you can't ignore them completely. And I think when you look at the stats, the guy who had the most successful year offensively for the New York Mets was Juan Soto. He had the highest OPS, 921. He hit the most home runs, 43. He stole the most bases, 38. He obviously didn't lead in RBIs, didn't lead in batting average, but his overall stats, like I think if you went to somebody and said, all right, here are the numbers from the 2025 Mets, tell me who their best player was, I think most people would say it was Juan Soto. But watching Juan every day, I don't know if anybody would agree with that. I don't know if anybody who watched the Mets every day would walk away from it and say, he's the MVP. His defense in right field was average. I don't think it was particularly bad, despite what defensive metrics tell you. I thought the stolen base was a great weapon and almost made his season even better than what the stats will tell you, because think about the amount of walks and singles that literally turned into extra base hits. Juan Soto had 20 doubles this season. That was fewer than Pete Alonso by double. It was actually even fewer than Jeff McNeil. So it wasn't a big number, but I think when you factor in the amount of times he stole second base, and look, he ended up stealing 38 bases. Just off the top of my head, I would assume at least 25 of them were of second base, not of third base. So I think it was a great weapon to his game, but just watching him every day, the lack of big hits, especially early in the season, and even at the very end with the big double play in game 162, I just can't call him the MVP. So the numbers will tell you he is. I just don't feel that way. And feelings matter, honestly. And then when you look, if you want to look at certain numbers, like the clutch numbers, the runners in scoring position numbers, that's where Pete has the big edge. And I think the other reason Pete has an edge on Juan is, if I ask you, and I know it's very tough to do this soon after the season ended, maybe the award show needed to be in December. But hey, I disagree with Major League Baseball. They announce all their awards in November. It's way too late. I think you have to do it right after the season. But if I asked you, name me the biggest hits from this past season, and take the jokes out, take all the jokes about how bad this team was, they didn't have a lot of big hits, all that crap. Pete Alonso had more of those than anybody else. He just did. You go back to the way beginning of the season, the home run he hit against the Marlins, the final game of that series, final game of that road trip. He just had a lot of big hits. But that's not me saying Pete Alonso is the Mets MVP, because there's somebody else. Now, you may be saying, all right, if it's not Juan Soto statistically and it's not Pete Alonso, is it Francisco Lindor, who ended up with an 811 OPS, 31 home runs, 31 stolen bases, and even his clutch numbers were pretty good? No, it's not Francisco Lindor. The other guy I'm wrestling with is Edwin Diaz, because when you look at the rest of that bullpen, what was the constant? The answer is there wasn't one. There were pockets of success from certain relievers. Like for a while, Reed Garrett was pretty good. For a while, Waskar Brazoban was really good. For a while, Brooks Raley, activated from the IL off Tommy John surgery, was pretty good. There was a lot of guys that gave you pretty good. But how many guys stood toe-to-toe as a reliable force next to Edwin Diaz? And the answer is nobody. And then when you look at his 1.63 ERA, you look at the 28 saves, even look at the six wins, because remember, you can't get wins and saves in the same games. So 34 games were impacted in terms of a result of a save or a win because of Edwin Diaz. And there were very few days in which he was ineffective. And what's the definition of an MVP? The definition is, well, if you take that guy off the team, you're far worse. Now, I agree. You take Pete Alonso off the team, you're far worse. But I'm afraid to tell you that if you take Edwin Diaz off this team, I don't know what it looks like. So I wrestled back and forth between Pete Alonso and Edwin Diaz. And ultimately, my answer is Edwin Diaz. I think Edwin Diaz is the MVP of the 2025 New York Mets. Pete Hoffman, your thinking and your vote for Mets MVP.
So I will like to put up Lindor just to be, you know, somebody who I understand the Mets and his season was a little disappointing. Well, a little disappointing, a lot disappointing. But when you talk about wins and how the team flowed, it all, you talk about big moments, it circled around Francisco Lindor. As he did well, the team did well. So I think that's got to be in consideration. I think you have to scratch Juan Soto off because his numbers did not lead to wins. And that's ultimately what is most important. You need to be able to win games. Some of the big home runs he had, or home runs that were like, oh, is this his Met moment, were in losses and didn't do anything. And were solo home runs. So I think you cross him off. I do agree, though, that it's either Pete Alonso or Edwin Diaz are the other two guys. There's nobody else on this list. And I would lean, and you're going to be shocked by this, Pete Alonso is not the MVP. It's Edwin Diaz. Because, like you said, and I was thinking of this before, Edwin Diaz was basically flawless this season. He basically walked in there and was the only guy to do his job. So if you're talking about somebody who consistently did his job, led to wins, it's Edwin Diaz. I mean, at the end of the season, we're asking him to pitch two innings in the mid of the game because we're desperate over here. He did what we asked him to, and he succeeded. And again, maybe he didn't always lead to success, but it wasn't his fault.
He had three blown saves this season. And the thing about a blown save is that doesn't mean you lose. It just means you blew a save. They won two of those games. There was one game this year. It was the game against Texas in which he blew a save, and then they ended up losing 3-2. That was the only one that turned into a loss. And outside of that, so even when he wasn't perfect, even when he was off, the Mets managed to win those games. And it seemed like everybody slumped this season at some point. He never did. So we're unanimous, and that makes me feel good because I really did wrestle back and forth about it because for a big part of this season, I envisioned what it would look like if they didn't re-sign Pete Alonso, whether it was, you know, trading for Spencer Torkelson, who was fine in Detroit. Like, he had a decent season, but he wasn't Pete Alonso. Or, hey, we're going to run it with Vientos playing first base and Beatty playing third base every day. And even if that meant more production from both guys because they were guaranteed everyday jobs, just think about the impact that Pete had and how much it would have negatively affected this team not having him around. And then even the Rico I'm the Man Right Now Star of the Series Award that we handed out throughout this season. He won it 7 times. Lindor won it 5. Soto won it 5. Edwin Diaz came on strong at the end of the year. He only won it 3 times, but the Rico I'm the Man Right Now Star of the Series, I hate to tell everybody, is not indicative of the MVP. It's just indicative of the star right now of that series. But I think over the course of 162, in terms of being out there whenever needed, pitching multiple innings whenever needed, and we saw him do that a little bit down the stretch of this season, when Carlos Mendoza said, go get me 6 outs. You know, he did that 4 times this year, which is kind of crazy. 4 times, twice in the final week of the season against Chicago, and then in game 162 against Miami when he pitched, you know, in the 6th and 7th inning or the 5th and 6th inning, whatever the heck it was. Memory is already going away from it. So I think whenever they needed him, he went out there and delivered and had a wonderful, wonderful season. So it's good to see we're unanimous on that. And just to get it out of the way, we do have a reliever of the year award, which last year we were split on. I still thought it was Diaz, despite some of his struggles. Hoff thought it was Phil Maton. Obviously, we don't need to waste much breath on this. It was very clearly Edwin Diaz. But, you know, if you're curious about what this bullpen looked like at the end of the day, after all the ups and downs, let this be kind of your indicator. Edwin Diaz made 62 appearances. There were only four Mets that made 35 or more appearances. So there's a huge drop-off from the four guys that went out there and appeared in a lot of games. Ryan Stanek actually led the team. He appeared in 65 games. He pitched to a 5.30 ERA and lost six times. Edwin Diaz appeared in 62 games. We all know about his greatness. Third on this list was Reed Garrett, who was so up and down at times this year. And unfortunately for him, it ended badly with him needing Tommy John surgery. He ended up pitching to a 3.90 ERA. And then the other guy who made a lot of appearances, 52, was Waskar Brazoban, who was great earlier this year. And he got off to a wonderful start. Then he started to struggle. Maybe he was overworked. Ended up in the minors where they were stretching him out, the intention of stretching him out. And then when he came back, he had some pretty good appearances. But overall, he spent part of the year in the minors, ended up pitching with 3.57 ERA. The guy with the next most appearances after you get past the big four is actually Jose Buteau, who ended up getting traded midseason to the San Francisco Giants.
Oh, so where's Tyler Rogers on that list? I feel like we used him like 30 times in 60 days.
Close, 28 times. But again, they traded for him in August and September. So even though they used him all the time, it was only the final 2 months of the season.
Where does Chris Davinsky land on that list?
In terms of appearances?
I think he's going to get an honorable mention because the guy was – he got the shaft. He came in, did his job basically all the time. I think there was only one game when they asked him to pitch an extended inning that he really did bad. Now, listen, he probably doesn't qualify. Doesn't have enough innings pitched. But he got called up like six times.
Yeah, he ended up making 13 appearances and pitched to a 2.16 ERA. And to your point, like most of his appearances this year were actually pretty good. And then he had the one implosion that brought his ERA up. In fact, looking back at his time here, only three of them featured him giving up runs. So, yeah, he was good. And I'll give everybody a preview later on in this offseason. We are going to do the Syracuse bus, Rico Bronya, where we go through all the different pitchers that kept getting called up, sent down, called up, DFA'd, re-signed, called up. And we're going to go through all the different kind of junctures of the season that they had with the Mets, coming back to the Mets. It's actually going to be a very interesting study, believe it or not. The podcast will be a lot more interesting than the way I just described it. But I assume you're in agreement, Edwin Diaz, reliever of the year.
Yeah, Edwin Diaz. By the way, didn't the Syracuse Mets win something this year?
Did they? I know that Brooklyn won, and I thought Binghamton won, but I'm not sure. How did Syracuse do?
I can't remember. I thought I saw. I just thought the minor leagues did much better than the Mets did, the actual Mets.
No, they did. And look, the Mets have, and this is what's so weird about this offseason, the Mets have a loaded farm system, and they've got guys who are ready to contribute in 2026, and it's weird off a choke year to say the Mets are in great shape or it's exciting to be a Met fan, but they are loaded with prospects, so it's like half and half. Anyhow, let's get to the Mets Cy Young Award winner of 2025. I would love for it not to be Edwin Diaz. I would love for us not to give him basically every single award. But if we want to make this a starting pitcher award, like if that's the goal, if you say, you know what, Evan, yeah, we've seen relievers win the Cy Young Award. It's happened before. It's happened a bunch of times, but let's make this a starting pitching award. It's really tough to pick anybody but Clay Holmes. And I know that's strange because Clay at times was really, really frustrating, but I think David Peterson's season ended so badly that the final numbers tell you that their best starting pitcher was Clay Holmes. Even though in April, May, June, and July, you know, David Peterson was the guy, but I think the fall off was so significant. Listen to these final numbers because David Peterson and Clay Holmes are the only.
Every idea starts with a problem. Warby Parker's was simple. Glasses are too expensive. So they set out to change that. By designing glasses in-house and selling directly to customers, they're able to offer prescription eyewear that's expertly crafted and unexpectedly affordable. Warby Parker glasses are made from premium materials like impact-resistant polycarbonate and custom acetate, and they start at just $95, including prescription lenses. Get glasses made from the good stuff. Stop by a Warby Parker store near you.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Options, because after them both made 30 plus starts, the guy with the next most starts is Kodai Senga, who made 22, and the guy after that, believe it or not, is Griffin Canning, who made 16 and was pitching really well until unfortunately he had the major injury. The Mets only had six guys make double digit starts. Holmes, Peterson, 1-2, Senga, 3, Canning, 4, Tyler McGill, 5, Sean Manaea, 6. And after that, you get to Nolan McClain. But the Cy Young Award is not a starting pitching only award. So, yes, again, congratulations to Edwin Diaz, who's cleaning it up at the Rico Award Show. And I'll tell you, Edwin Diaz's agent may want to send this to the Mets and say, hey, he's going to opt out. He's going to be a free agent. He won the Rico MVP. He won the Rico Reliever of the Year. He won the Rico Cy Young Award winner. Pay the man. And maybe this is an infomercial for how important it is to bring him back, but it is. And we'll do a Rico episode deep diving Edwin Diaz's year and also previewing what the options would be if they ever lost him. That's a scary Rico Bronya, because the Mets without Edwin Diaz is a frightening place. So, Hoff, I know you're a big Clay Holmes guy, and you could try to make the case for him,
yeah.
But who is the Rico Cy Young Award winner of 2025?
This episode is brought to you by Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels and music are made for each other. They share a rhythm in the craft of making something timeless, while being a part of legendary nights. From backyard jams to sold-out arenas, there's a song in every toast. Please drink responsibly. Responsibility.org. Jack Daniels and Old Number 7 are registered trademarks. Tennessee Whiskey, 40% alcohol by volume. Jack Daniel Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Listening to this podcast? Smart move. Being financially savvy? Smart move. Another smart move? Having State Farm help you create a competitive price when you choose to bundle home and auto. Bundling. Just another way to save with a personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
If you're going to make it Edwin Diaz, then I am going to go Griffin Canning. And I don't think he's got enough innings.
What?
But he would have. Look, he was 7-3. Listen, I know that wins don't mean anything. Like, Jacob DeGrom won the Cy Young without having wins. But in this case, he was the most efficient pitcher when he stepped on the mound, besides Edwin Diaz.
But if you go by that, then you could look at David Peterson and say, hey, it was the last eight starts that completely derailed him. Because listen to these numbers, and they're kind of crazy to think about, considering David Peterson finished the year with a 4.22 ERA, which nobody would consider good. After August 6th start against the Cleveland Guardians, and I could even go back a start earlier to make it look even more, even better, but I want to keep it under three. After his start in August against Cleveland, I think that was actually the Gavin Williams game, the near no-hitter.
Oh, yeah.
Here were David Peterson's numbers. This is the middle of August. The middle of August. He had a 7-5 record with a 2.98 ERA. He had a sub-3 ERA in the middle of August, and then his last eight starts were so bad. He had one really good one in there. He went 3 1/3, six runs against Atlanta, which brought the ERA up to 3.3. Then he threw kind of like the last gasp. He pitched eight innings, allowed one run, and struck out 10 against the Washington Nationals. That brought the ERA back down to 3.18. And then after that, 5 2/3 innings, two runs. ERA remained at 3.18. And then the final five starts, when his ERA went from 3.18 to 4.22. Imagine that. Five starts, and his ERA goes up a run. Two innings, eight runs. 5 1/3, four. Five innings, three. Five innings, six. And then finally, an inning and a third, five runs. And that brought his ERA from 3.18 on August 30th to 4.22 on September 23rd.
That's absurd.
David Peterson could have, or should have, if you will, won some kind of award here, because for 70% of the season, he was really good.
Would you? All right, fine. Can we make an opener of the year award?
We didn't even use any openers. Starting pitchers go deep enough. That's different.
Right. Listen, again, you're right. Peterson had a bad, rough stretch those last eight. But Griffin Canning, and I will say this, like, you say what you want. The only time he pitched bad was when they really tried to stretch him into an extra inning. That's it. Like, he went five innings, and he was fine.
Canning was good. And, you know, I thought he was a pleasant surprise and was certainly a big part of why they pitched so well the first few months of the year. Look, my only point with the David Peterson stuff is not that he should win an award. I think if you really think about it and you take the emotion out of how disgusted we were by the last five starts, you can look at his season and be encouraged for 2026. And we're going to hand out – no, I'm dead serious, because Hoff, 75% of his season, he was their best starter. Like, are you really willing – are we really all willing to look at the final five starts, which may have been him hitting a wall? It may have been. And say, oh, he blows? Like, you really think that's logical to do with him?
No, but here's the thing, right? We looked at last year and saw, like, the second half of a season and how good he was. It was like, oh, my God, he found it. And it was – if you take these stretches, it's weird. This happens a lot more than we think. Like, Severino had, I think, these stretches in him too. But, like, they go from halfway – like, you know, take a post All-Star break last year to pre All-Star break. His numbers are absurd, David Peterson. He was phenomenal. But now, if you take the end of the season with the front part of last season, I mean, he's not a major league pitcher.
I know, but that doesn't, that's just you picking periods of times to rip him for. All I'm saying is, and I think this is going to be challenging when we grade everybody, which we'll be doing in a couple of days. We're going to begin the grading process. Every single player who suited up for the Mets will receive some kind of grade. I think David Peterson has one of the most complicated grades, because it's as if you took a class and from September to April, you aced it. You were the best student. You were getting nothing but straight A's. And then on your final three or four exams, you got such horrible grades, it brought down your average to a 75. Meanwhile, the entire year, you were acing tests. But that's for a different Rico Bronya. Let's get to another award that I think is actually going to be very easy, another straightforward award, and that is the 2025 Rico Bronya Mets Rookie of the Year Award winner. Before we tell you the winner, let's go through the guys that were rookies for the Mets this season. They actually had three position players that were rookies: Hayden Senger, Luis Angel Acuna, and Ronnie Mauricio. I don't think either of those three guys put up rookie of the year numbers. Hayden Senger was a fine backup, hit 181 with a 415 OPS. Luis Angel Acuna, and I think it's fair to say it was a disappointment this year. I think there was hope coming out of spring training, especially what he did filling in for Lindor last year, that he could be a contributor. There was an opportunity right in front of him with Jeff McNeil hurt for the first month of the season or the first few weeks of the year. Luis Angel Acuna ended up hitting 234, never hit a home run, drove in 8 runs, and played to a 567 OPS. His value was his defense and his speed off the bench. Next year is going to be a big year for him. And Ronnie Mauricio tore it up in AAA, finally got the call up to the major leagues. Didn't take long for him to get it. And while he had some good moments, hit 226, 662 OPS, 6 home runs, and 10 RBIs. There were a lot of rookie pitchers. Dom Hamill, who only threw an inning. Jonathan Pintaro, who only threw 2/3 of an inning. Alex Carrillo, who threw 4 2/3 innings. Blade Tidwell, who threw 15 innings and eventually was in the Tyler Rogers trade. Brandon Sproat, who made 4 major league starts. Jonah Tong, who made 5 major league starts. Justin Hagenman. Max Kranick. Well, I was surprised he's still a rookie, but I guess he technically was. And then finally, Nolan McClain. Nolan McClain maintains his rookie status for 2026. But in the world of Rico Bronya, we're not playing that game. Nolan McClain is the Rico Bronya 2025 Mets Rookie of the Year. 8 starts, a 2.06 ERA. He may never be able to do this at the major league level because there are rules against it. But at the Rico level, he's got a chance to win back-to-back Rookie of the Year awards. But I don't think there's any question, Hoff. Of all the rookies we saw in 2025, it was not close. And I think it all excites all of us about the possibilities of Nolan McClain in 2026.
No question. Now, my one question is, do the Mets still get a draft pick if they win next year? If he wins next year, the Rookie of the Year
award. Well, unfortunately, you don't get draft picks for winning the Rico Bronya Award. But if he does win the regular Rookie of the Year award, yes, the Mets would get a draft pick. And he's going to be a heavy favorite. I mean, he obviously shot up a rookie ranking list, or I should say prospect ranking list, prior to his call-up. And then he gets called up and does a marvelous job. And I can't be the only one who thought this. I think a lot of us did. When Cam Schlittler threw that game against the Red Sox, I think a lot of Met fans kind of gazed at it and said, man, I wish Nolan McClain got that chance. Even if the Mets were never going to beat the Dodgers in a best-of-3 series, it would have been so awesome to see this kid at least get that opportunity to shine on a national level. And I'm not sure he would have done the same thing that Schlittler did. The Dodger lineup is certainly not the Red Sox lineup, but that's a shame. And I think we all kind of thought that watching Schlittler pitch that, man, it would have been cool to see Nolan McClain get that opportunity.
No doubt. I mean, the guy he brought so much electricity in how many official starts he had? Six starts?
He ended up making 8 major league starts.
Electric. I mean, he brought the crowd.
What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost. Their designer quality frames start at $95, including prescription lenses, plus scratch-resistant, smudge-resistant, and anti-reflective coatings, and UV protection, and free adjustments for life. To find your next pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to find the Warby Parker store nearest you, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
He brought wins. He brought everything. I mean, he was fantastic. And yes, I wish he was on the national spotlight a little bit, but on the other hand too, I'm okay with saying let's hide him a little bit longer, as long as possible.
Nolan McLean, 8 major league starts, a 5-1 record, a 2.06 ERA. He ended up throwing 48 innings in those 8 starts. So he averaged 6 innings per start, which is crazy considering the Mets went months without anybody not named David Peterson giving them 6 innings. Let's go to the surprise of the year. Now, context. Last year, our surprise of the year was Jose Iglesias. Clearly, a guy gets a minor league invite. He comes over. He turns into OMG. He turns into a pop star. I don't think this 2025 Met team has someone as obvious as a surprise of the year. You know, you kind of go through the position players and you say, well, you know, Alonso's not a surprise. McNeil, Lindor. Is Beatty a surprise? I mean, Beatty ended up having a pretty good year. Nimmo, Taylor, Soto, not a surprise. Marte. Is there really anybody position player-wise? I mean, I guess you could nominate a Nolan McLean as a surprise just because he's a young player. But the more I circled around it and the more I said, all right, what was genuinely a surprise? I'll give you my vote. I'm not expecting Hoff to agree with me. But I think the surprise was Brett Beatty, because not that everyone feels this way, but I know that a lot of Met fans feel this way. You look at Brett Beatty and what he accomplished in 2025 in terms of his production, especially the last few months, because I think his overall numbers are okay. But really, if you look at what he did kind of as the season went on, especially defensively, the way he looked defensively at third base, the way he even looked defensively at second base, I think that you look at Beatty and say, hey, that's an everyday player. That's a guy who I want kind of as an everyday player next year, probably at third base, but maybe even at second base. In the second half of the year, Brett Beatty hit .291 with an .830 OPS with 9 home runs. In August and September, if you kind of take out July, the numbers are even better. He hit lefties the last 2 months of the year. But I go back to the defense. His defense was so stellar at third base. I think that was surprising. So to me, he kind of fits the bill as the surprise of the year. And a year ago, at least for Hoff, he was the disappointment of the year. And I didn't think that was a bad choice last year. I picked Kodai Senga, but totally get it. But to me this year, he's the surprise of 2025, Brett Beatty. What say you, Hoff? Hello, Pete. Pete is so shocked. Sorry. I picked Brett Beatty. He's like, I don't know what to do with myself.
At Sierra, discover top workout gear at incredible prices, which might lead to another discovery. Your headphones haven't been connected this whole time. Awkward. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp. The secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans. Send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th. And never miss a meme or milestone. All protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at WhatsApp.com.
I'm digging over here trying to fight you on this. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try anyway.
Go ahead.
I was going to go with Tyrone Taylor because, and I'm not really, but I will make a case for him very briefly. We were desperate for Tyrone Taylor at the last half of the season, the end of the season. Like, we were begging for Cedric Mullins not to play because for Tyrone Taylor. So to have that it's more of a criticism, David Stearns, but the fact is that he played a hell of a defensive center field out there. And unfortunately, his offense didn't do enough. But he was our starting center fielder. He was the guy we relied upon. So I guess in that sense, I'm surprised that that's who saw most of the appearances in center field. I don't want to fight you on Brett Beatty because you're right. He was somebody who, even the first half of the season, again, I'm not sitting here and praising the kid. I still think he's got a long way to go. And I will tell you this much. For people that think that I'm just a Brett Beatty hater, Brandon Nimmo hater, I'll put it this way. Brett Beatty is somebody who probably could have a nice long career in the majors. No doubt about it. I'm not telling you just to give up on him. But is he ready? Was he ready? He's gotten a lot of opportunities, and I think that has helped cater to him being productive in this second half of the season, because it's really the second half that's really picked up.
Yeah, I mean, no question about it, because if you think back to earlier in the year, he ended up getting sent down. Like, Brett Beatty was not just here this entire year. So it took a few extra opportunities for Brett to finally put it together. I think he's going to be a really interesting name this offseason, because I think his value has certainly been improved based on the year he had. And if the Mets are going to be hunting for a starting pitcher, I know we've thrown out the Beatty in a package for Alcantara many, many times. And going back to last year, every Met fan would have screamed, yes, yes, yes. I think you still say yes. Don't get me wrong, but I think there would be more hesitation to part with Brett Beatty, considering what he did and what Mark Vientos didn't do. And I think that, you know, he ended up having a really good year. It doesn't mean he's guaranteed to be the starting third baseman next year, because I do see a world where the Mets trade him, where they take advantage of the value that he just put together. But when you look at the way he played in the second half, his overall defense, he ended up kind of proving himself. And the other candidate that, it's funny, I know you don't want to say him, but if I asked you in March, and I probably did, I'd have to go back to the archives of the Rico to find your answer. If I said, I want you to predict Clay Holmes' year, I don't think there's any shot you would have actually predicted what Clay Holmes did, because he ends up making 30 starts, the innings he threw, the ERA that he finished with. I think a lot can be made of Clay Holmes being the surprise of the year, because how many of us thought he was going to complete the year as a starter and put up the numbers he ended up putting up?
You're 100% right on that. I would have never bought into – I never really did buy into Clay Holmes. It's an experiment. It worked out. As a fifth starter, it definitely worked out. But again, like, I never thought that he'd be able to last this long. I'm shocked. How many innings did he officially pitch? 150? 140? What was his total?
Let me give you the exact answer. I don't want to pretend a number. I'll give you the exact number. Clay Holmes ended up with 165 and two-thirds innings, which was only three behind David Peterson for the team lead.
And what was his prior number as a reliever? What, 70? I mean, he
63. 63, yeah. The most innings he ever threw in his career was 2021 when he threw 70. So he more than doubled his career high major league total of innings pitched.
Yeah, I got to give him a lot of props for that. Like, listen, no matter what I say, and I'm a jerk at times. I'm a bitter Met fan at times where when things something goes wrong, even when it goes right, I'm still not thrilled because I want to win. And he was one thing that went right. You know, he went out there and did his job. He pitched as well as he could. That was a tough thing. Like, I don't understand. And you tell me where I'm wrong here. What is the infatuation with trying to make relievers all of a sudden starters? Like Seth Lugo, you got Michael King in San Diego. But, like, it feels like all of a sudden, like, there's these guys that they're just trying to put length into.
I'm going to go back to a debate I had on WFAN many years ago. I was a young host, and I had an opinion that was not popular. Mike disagreed, Beningo disagreed, everyone disagreed. And it was the old Jabba debate, one of the great debates in WFAN history, Jabba Chamberlain. And I would argue with Joe about this all the time, in which most Yankee fans, and in Joe's case, just a baseball fan, said, why would the Yankees mess with Jabba Chamberlain? The guy was this electric relief pitcher. Why move him to the rotation? And my answer that I gave Joe years and years ago, and I gave Mike, because we argued in the newsroom a few times about this, is the same thing I'm going to say to you right now. It's a question. Would you rather have a really good starting pitcher who can give you 180 innings, Back then, I probably said 200, but it's 2025. 180 innings, 107 innings, a 3.5 ERA. Take the baseball every 5 or 6 days. Or would you rather have a pretty good reliever? And the answer then, maybe it's different now, was always, well, the starter. I mean, if you're telling me I'm going to get 30 starts out of a guy and he's going to pitch to a mid-3 ERA, he's going to be a really solid starting pitcher, that's what I would prefer. And I still think that's the answer, even in a world in which relievers pitch more than ever. Like, you'd rather have that starting pitcher. And so if you think that guy can be that starting pitcher, why wouldn't you do it? I guess would be the question. Why would you not want to have that?
I didn't understand the pedigree that Clay Holmes put together that made, David Stearns and company think that could even be a thing. You know what I mean? And I do understand. I do understand Moneyball. Like, that the whole point is, how do you put together, like, you have X amount of innings in a year. How do we get, if someone's going to offer you 165 innings compared to 70 innings, and he's going to give you those numbers that he put up this year. Okay, yeah, that gets you much closer to your goal than a relief pitcher that only gives you 60 innings, and you got to still fill up another 100 on top of that. So I get it.
All right, let's get to the disappointment of the year. Last year we were split on it. I thought it was Kodai Senga. You thought it was Brett Beatty. There are so many, which I guess is the depressing part of this award show here on the Rico Brilliant, that there's so many candidates for disappointment of the year. Sean Manaea, we were excited to re-sign. I did a Rico Bronya at 3 o'clock in the morning after traveling to Raleigh, North Carolina. You can go into the archives to listen to that dopey Rico Bronya. We were pumped about Sean Manaea returning. Well, let's think about the season he just had. I mean, that's the definition of disappointment. Sean Manaea comes out. First of all, he misses a ton of games, only makes 12 starts, and pitches to a 5.64 ERA. That should be, on the surface, the leader in the clubhouse to be the disappointment of the year. Kodai Senga, his final numbers look okay. 22 starts, 3.02 ERA. If I told you that at the beginning of the year, you'd probably say, well, when did he miss the 10 starts? If it was in June, July, hey, no big deal. Well, that was the case. The problem was he was so good early and then crumbled late. But is Kodai Senga a disappointment when you watched him all season long? Absolutely. A.J. Minter. We forget A.J. Minter was ever on the New York Mets, but they signed him to be a big part of this bullpen. And I'm sorry, injuries are a part of it. I mean, we called Kodai Senga disappointment of the year last year. It was because of injuries. Frankie Montas. Maybe that's the answer to David Stearns, because David Stearns was the only guy that thought he was any good. So maybe for him, it was the disappointment of the year. But despite all the names I just mentioned, the answer is easy for me. Even though Sean Manaea could win this in any given year, I think it's Mark Vientos. Because considering what he did in October, not just what he did once he became the starting third baseman, which was good enough, what he did in October, for Mark Vientos to fall flat on his face the way he did, he ends up finishing the season with a negative WAR. His final numbers actually are better than what they looked like they were going to be after his awful start. But he had 233, a 700 OPS, 17 home runs, horrific defense at third base, in which he went backwards. He went backwards as a defender. And when we try to figure out why the Met offense wasn't better than we thought, why it didn't live up to the hype that we had for it, there are many reasons. The main reason is Mark Vientos. Not to defend Sean Manaea, because I'm not. Again, he's a worthy winner. But Hoff, to me, the disappointment of the year in 2025, and it was not close, is Mark Vientos.
I 1,000% agree with you. This is just an easy award. It sucks. This is a guy that I thought was going to put up 30, maybe even 40 home runs. The defense I never thought was going to be amazing, but I thought that he definitely fill in the role a lot better and at least be a DH, and he couldn't do anything. He was unavailable, whether it was physically, mentally, whatever the case is, he just was not who we thought he was going to be. And it sucked. The only other person I would throw in there, and it was disappointment, but it was only for 2 months, so I guess it's okay. But Ryan Helsley was a complete and utter disappointment.
Yeah.
I mean, we hyped him up like this is going to be, I mean, Edwin Diaz and Ryan Helsley. You got two closers on this team now? I'll forget about it. And Ryan Helsley never gave us a moment. I mean, he gave us a ton of losses, and those were the moments that we got from him. It was awful. And I just read an article about how he said he tried to make New York. He didn't think it was going to be a big deal coming to New York, but it was. It was stressful for him.
Sometimes you just don't know. You just don't know who can handle New York. So unanimous, Mark Vientos, disappointment of the year. You know, you could celebrate your highlights with Mio's Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, easy to enjoy, whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot. As for Mio's Sparkling Sake by name, a new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan, official sake of Rico Brogna. Enjoy responsibly. So we have two awards left. We've got the moment of the year, which is a positive award, like the moment of the year, that the happiest moment of the year we had in 2025. And we have the negative moment of the year. Now, I believe we should end the Rico on a positive note. So let's do the negative moment of the year now, get it out of the way, and then somehow we'll find a positive moment to kind of go home happy, if you will. The negative moment of the year, and it's got to be a moment, okay? It can't be a game. We're going to do worst losses of the year much later on during the offseason. We're going to give that time for us to try to hopefully get over it, though we never will. This is a moment, a specific moment that was most negative. And again, unfortunately, there are so many candidates. So many. I mean, I could start listing them off right now, and it would be very, very depressing. But again, I wanted to close my eyes. And I wanted to say, all right, Evan, 2025 season, filled with negatives. Does anything jump out at you? And the two things that really stay in my head is the Saturday game against the Nationals, the final Saturday home game of the season, in which they came back, they had the game won, and they blew it. But I wrestled with, well, which of those moments jump out at you the most? The Brandon Nimmo strikeout with the bases loaded and less than two outs? Is it Brandon Nimmo? Is it the inside the park home run? Or is it Juan Soto striking out to end the game? Fair or not. Not to put this all on Juan Soto, but there's a moment. They're all up there, but it isn't the moment. There is one negative moment that trumps that. One negative moment that honestly trumps everything. And it's unfortunate because the moment I'm about to reveal to you, in my opinion, is nobody's fault. And it feels like in 2025, where it was so many people's faults, it would make more sense to have a moment in which I can say F you to a particular person. The only F you I'm going to give in this moment is to the baseball gods. The worst moment of 2025, the negative moment of the year, was Pete Alonso's line out in game 162. They are set up to come back. And it's set up to be such a beautiful story. Like, think about it. The Mets are choking down the stretch of the year. I mean, basically choking for 3 months. And if choking isn't the right word and you just want to say they're a bad team, okay, fine. A slow death for 3 months watching this baseball team. They're in game 162, and it looks like they're going to get a break because the Cincinnati Reds are now losing to the Milwaukee Brewers. Like, wow, things are changing, but they're down 4-0. It's the sixth inning, so it's still like sort of early. It's not the end of the world in this game. It's not the ninth inning, but to come back in a game in which you're trailing 4-0, like I always say, you're going to have to chip away. And they're set up with this bases loaded situation in which the Mets are a swing away from sure tying the game, but they're a swing away from making this game completely different. Everything changing. You know, and by the way, it was the fifth inning. It wasn't even the sixth inning. It was the fifth inning. So it's still early. And Pete Alonso hits this just absolute laser of a line drive. And even though it only took a second for Javier Sanoja to make the catch, I could see everything flash before my eyes. Like, oh my God, what a story this is going to be. The team that never comes back. The team that gave us a slow death. they're going to rally in game 162 and they're going to get the help they need. They're going to make the playoffs and they're going to erase all of these negative feelings. And as I saw Sanoha kind of move over towards his left and make that catch, talk about the death of a season. I know some saw the death of a season much earlier than that. That was the death of a season. That was an absolute killer. And when I think back to the failure of this season, I think that moment's going to trump everything. Even though they did not lose the game, they still had four innings to go. Even though their death sentence was written before that, with the way they played, to me, that is the negative moment of the year. I can still feel it. I can still see it. I can still smell it. That is number one. A lot of other great contenders off, but the Pete Alonso line out of doom in game 162 is the negative moment of the year for me.
Okay. And listen, I think that's well thought out, well planned. And I do agree that Pete Alonso is involved with the negative moment of the year.
Oh,
but I don't think that's it. I think there's an obvious one. And I think everyone circles back to June 13th as being a day that we get very upset about. But it's really the day before that. Oh. It's the Pete Alonso ground ball or throw to first base for Kodai Senga. And it just gets misplayed and Kodai Senga gets injured. And it seems like ever since that moment, the Mets just went downhill from there. I don't know if you could do it for an injury, but I feel like that's the moment.
I think that's a very good one. And I think if we ever put this up as a poll and said, all right, everybody, tell us what's the negative moment of the year? Is it 162 Alonso lineout or is it the Alonso flip to Kodai Senga? I think a lot of people are going to agree with you. You're not wrong. I just want to give you why I wouldn't vote for that. But again, I totally get why that's an answer for you and many. I didn't feel it at the time. Like, I think it's one of those moments that you look back on and very easily say, wow, the season went to the craps when that happened. But did you think, and we can go back and anyone can go back and listen to the Rico right after that game because it was a series ending Rico Bronya and they had swept the series and they were on a winning streak. Did anybody really see any of this coming?
No, I don't think I could. If I said that, that would have been just me being sarcastic. I think I think that no one saw this coming. But when you look back at it and you look at the season as in totality, I mean, the 162 is definitely the freshest and it's right there and that hurts you the most. But how many times did we have opportunities to win games? We could go back. I mean, listen, there's 70 games we can go back to and say, hey, the Mets didn't come back and win this game, right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities to go, this is negative. But I think that one in particular really, it struck a chord and it lingered on. And now some people might say it's the most positive because this might be the reason why Kodai Senga won't be here anymore. You know, maybe.
That's not a good positive. I mean, if they move on from Kodai Senga, which I think is a real possibility, even if you weren't a huge fan of his, I don't think that that's a moment anyone's ever going to look back on fondly, because that, along with what happened on Friday night with Clay Holmes coming out early and them losing to Tampa Bay. Again, I was at that game that night and I was annoyed when they lost, but I didn't think it was going to lead to this. I don't think anyone did. It's one of those revisionist history kind of moves where you look back at something and say, oh, crap, that led to the demise. But I don't think anybody thought between the Senga injury and then obviously the Friday night collapse against Tampa, I don't think anybody thought at the time it was going to lead to kind of what we're sitting in now.
No, you're right. And this collapse, but the funny thing is that this collapse was going on for a long time and no one really thought about it until like the last couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah, because I think that even though they were a bad team for a while and we voiced our concerns, we ultimately thought they were going to make the playoffs anyway. And I think a part of that was the nature of the playoff race, the nature of, hey, three wild card teams make it. No one's going to really step up and take it. Where I was wrong looking back on it is I didn't think it would get to the point where they would only win 83 games. I thought the badness of the team would get him to 88 wins and it would be enough. And obviously it turned out not to be.
Yeah.
Let us get to our final award. the award that will leave us happy as we end the Rico Bronya, the moment of the year. Obviously, last year, there were so many great candidates. Lindor 161, Lindor Grand Slam against the Phillies, and of course, the ultimate winner, Pete Alonso's home run against the Brewers. I gave this one a lot of thought because I know it's easy to sit here right now and say there were no positive moments. They didn't have any comebacks because of the incredible stat of being 0-70 when trailing after 8. But there were good moments. You just forgot about them. And I gave it thought, closed my eyes, thought about this season. And, you know, Jeff McNeil against the Yankees. That was a really cool moment. Pete Alonso breaking the home run record, franchise home run record in a rout victory. That's a good one. Even that early season Pete Alonso home run against the Marlins, right, where they came back and they rallied to take the final game of that. That's a great moment. There were good moments. But there is one to me that stands above the rest. I want to take you back to the end of August. Mets-Phillies. Three-game series. They win the first two. In the finale of that series on a Wednesday night, as the Mets are going for the sweep to really get back into this race, Nolan McClain is on the mound against the Philadelphia Phillies looking for the sweep. And he was unfreaking believable. As good as Nolan McClain was this year in the relatively brief time that we saw him, this start in particular, his third major league start against the Philadelphia Phillies, in which he went 8 scoreless innings, didn't walk anybody, struck out 6, and left after 8 with a pitch count of 95, which is chronic crazy to think about. It pulled the Mets within 4. I still didn't think they were obviously contending, but hey, they swept the Philadelphia Phillies. They pulled within 4. They've got a shot. Nolan McClain's final out, I think, was a little roller right in front of the plate. It was fielded. It was thrown to first base. And as Nolan McClain walked off the mound after 8 scoreless innings, and we all knew he's not coming back out for the 9th inning, I stood up and cheered. I don't do it very often. Standing up and cheering is not something I do at basically ever. But he was so good. He was so locked in. He was so marvelous. The building was moving in a way that is special. In the way it would move for Tom Seaver, in the way it would move for Doc Gooden, in the way it would move for Matt Harvey or Jacob DeGrom, it was moving for Nolan McClain. And that's it, him walking off the mound, 8 scoreless innings. Simple as that. And I know it's a season in which maybe finding these moments is more challenging than others, but I want you to think about the way you felt if you watched that game that night or if you were in the building that night. It was special. And yeah, if you would have told me as I was standing there cheering for Nolan McClain, hey, you're going to miss the playoffs, dumbass, I would have said you're crazy. I know this team isn't playing well. They just did sweep the Phillies. Bare minimum, they're going to make the playoffs. But that was the moment of the year to me. There are other candidates, like I mentioned, but yeah, Nolan McClain walking off the mound, 8 scoreless innings, the sweep in hand of the Philadelphia Phillies, that to me was the moment of the year. For me. Now, I'm curious, off, because we think very differently, and these last few awards are debatable, unlike some of the others we handed out today. For you, moment of the year, 2025 New York Mets.
It's tough because I don't really, there's nothing, not much that sticks out. You know, I can almost go back to the Seattle game where he debuted and say that was the moment of the year because, I mean, that was. You talk about a must-win scenario for the Mets at that point in time. I remember watching the game. It was me and Tiki watching. We were at the preseason game for the Giants and watching this game in the background. And it's like it took over. Like we were talking about, wow, this kid is legit. And they needed to win this game, and he needed a great start. And there's so much pressure on the kid, and yet he came through. So, I mean, I think that's up there. I'm trying to think of like – like really big home run. Again, Juan Soto was somebody that I really wanted to have his moment. Even the moments he had, nothing stood out as being like, oh, that's it. So that's disappointing. even on his 30th stolen base, it was like, oh, okay, thanks for doing that. I think Lindor had some good moments, but I would say that Nolan McLean is definitely had the biggest moments, biggest impact, and it was towards the end of the season, unfortunately.
So your moment is the Seattle game, succeeding against the Mariners in his major league debut.
Yeah, I think that was I think there was so much buzz around that. I mean, and there was so much talk about that.
I'm surprised you didn't say McNeil's home run off Luke Weaver in the Subway Series on the 4th of July.
Nah, you know what? I know that was a huge moment. That was big. But there really wasn't – I'm looking at, like, even the Phillies game where they won, where they hit back-to-back-to-back-to-back hits and four straight hits off of what's his name?
Durant.
Durant, thank you very much. First time I think he's ever pitched in a game where he never recorded it out and gave up all back-to-back-to-back hits, whatever it was. Like, that was awesome. That was – but it also followed with Ryan Helsley coming in and blowing the game. Like, it was a good moment, but, like, it could have been avoided. So I feel like there's negative tones to a lot of these other situations. The Nolan McLean was just pure special.
Indeed. And that's one of the hopes for 2026. Of course, unless he's traded to Detroit for Scoobal or Pittsburgh for Paul Skeens. But either way, there are our awards for 2025. Not exactly as exciting and smiley as we were a year ago. But now the work of our Rico Bronya offseason gets tough, because now the pen and paper comes out and we start to hand out grades. Next week on the Rico Bronya, it's grading week. We are going to grade all the position players. We are going to grade all the starting pitchers and all the relievers. And eventually, we're going to grade the president himself, David Stearns. You can email us with your personal grades, thericob@gmail.com, thericob@gmail.com. And don't worry, if you have sent emails to the Rico over the last few days and weeks, I am collecting them. I am saving them. We have a lot of off-season plan ideas. We will certainly have a whole episode dedicated to that. So do not worry. We are going to read your emails live on the Rico Bronya and certainly discuss a lot of the great points made by the Rico audience. But grade week is coming. The pen and paper is coming out, and we are grading the 2025 New York Mets. We do appreciate you listening and subscribing to the Rico Bronya, and make sure you do subscribe. We are going to try during the offseason to stay on a regular schedule, usually a Rico Bronya post at some point Sunday and some point Wednesday. But here's the thing about me and Hoff. We never stop working. So the two a week that we guarantee is usually going to be more. That's just the way it goes. But subscribe so that you're never surprised when there's a new Rico Bronya, and can always watch us live on the YouTube, the WFAN YouTube page. Thank you very much for hanging out with us on another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Everything feels a bit uncertain right now. A few months ago, you never would have expected eggs being factored into your monthly budget. New sources of stress equal more opportunities for breakouts to strike. Luckily, Mighty Patch Original shrinks the look of pimples in just one use. We'd say that's a pretty good deal. Shop Mighty Patch at all major retailers.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.